I saw your beautiful wife. Jessica goes backstage.
Jessica goes back there.
How are the kids? How are the family?
Everyone is good. I am not, you know, a great believer in our style of parenting. What I mean is our generation, you, me, anybody that has kids now, I just think we're too into it. We're too into this thing. I don't know how we got so into it. When we were kids, our parents didn't give a damn about us. They didn't even know our names. But when I think of the bedtime routine for my kids is like this royal coronation jubilee centennial of rinsing and plaque and dental appliances and the stuffed animal semicircle of emotional support. And I got to read 8 different moron books. My bedtime story was when I was a kid? Yeah. Darkness. That was my bedtime story. That's it.
Go to bed.
Yes.
Go to bed.
How much parenting is too much? How much parenting is not enough? Our series that we're in, we're finishing up, is trying to answer some of those questions. And we've been using this guide. So if you grab your notes, we have a little graph for you. We've been talking about different phases that kids go through and then families go through and what's our role as parents. And we talked about the first one is when we're in that nursing phase. Our kids are really little tiny kids. They're toddlers. And they're wearing diapers, and they need us to feed them and change their diapers and take them everywhere and put them in their little seats and stroll them around in their little stroller. And every single thing they need, we have to provide. We're in the nursing phase, okay? So maybe you're there right now, you don't get much sleep, you're up in the middle of the night. I remember when my first son was born, 2 or 3 months after he was born, we were over at some friend's house at a barbecue, and they were talking about how they're up all through the night, and their little boy doesn't sleep through the night, and how tired they are. And I said, well, not my son. My son sleeps through the night all the time. My son sleeps through the night, and my wife looks at them and looks at me and looks at them and looks at me and says, you're the only one sleeping through the night around here. Fatiguing time, nursing time. And then it transitions. And you're in this time where the kids get a little bit older, and you have to sort of set the stage for the family. Your job, we call it the king and queen, is to set the parameters, the DNA. This is what the family looks like. This is what we do. This is what we don't do. This is what's acceptable. I am the king. I am the queen. I tell how the kingdom's going to happen. And they're to follow that. There are little subjects in our kingdoms. And it's very difficult if you're a single parent in this stage because it gets fatiguing. Or maybe you have a blended family. You have another king and another queen that they run their kingdom very differently than you do. It can get confusing and be very, very difficult. And yet, they need someone to say, this is how life works. This is the boundaries. This is how we're going to live. And, I wish I could say when that starts because it's hard. This is kind of an art. Like, when do they get out of the nursing? And maybe school. They get into school and they sort of know, okay, we're shifting now our phases. And then they get into high school and, the tug of war begins with them. Mark Twain says, you have a child and they start school, you put them in a barrel and you put a lid on it. And then when they get to be into high school, you plug up the hole with a cork. You're just like, it's tough when they get into high school. And you have to start to coach them. Because now they have a life. And it's a life that they're going to live. And if you hold on and be the king too long because I said so, you don't understand, then you're not preparing them for their life. Coaching's really hard because it's not your life or my life. It's the life that they live. You have to let them make their choices, and you have to kind of watch how their choices don't work out, and you're coaching, and that's that time. And then always you're hoping that it turns out to be a friendship. That I'm friends with my sons, I'm friends with my daughter, and it'd be nice if this little formula, this little theory works so perfectly, but it's very fluid. I mean, you have a 3-year-old and a 10-year-old and a 16-year-old. And you're working with the 3-year-old, you have your nursing cap on, and then you go to your 17-year-old daughter, you forget to take the cap off, and she's like, you're treating me like a baby. And you start to realize, I am treating you like a baby because I was just with the baby. Because if you have lots of kids. One woman said, before I had children, I had 5 theories on how to parent. Now I have 5 kids and no theories. have blended families. You know, you they're gone some of the week, and you're trying to figure it out. Like at Eastlake Church, we believe life is a process, and God's a part of that process. And so we've been talking about in our, there's no perfect families. That your family wasn't perfect, your family's not perfect now, and you're all over the map trying to figure this thing out. And we're going to close this series talking about one thing that can be in all the phases, and it can be the goal of every role that I take, and it's to have a close relationship with my kids. I can be close with them at the moment they're born all the way through. I remember even talking to my oldest son when he was still in the womb. I'd sing songs, and I didn't do it in public because that'd be weird, but I mean, I'd get up close to the baby and talk to the baby, and I am convinced that when Kapono arrived and when he heard my voice, I saw him turn. And I thought, I think he's been listening to me as he's in there, because you can be close to your children. We can be close to them. How does it happen? Right on your notes, it's about connection. Stay connected to stay close. And here's a part of the Bible. Don't exasperate your children by coming down hard on them. Take them by the hand and lead them in the way of the Master. Such a great picture of being close. And what does it mean to be close to someone, to share life? It has a lot to do with being connected, having a connection with them. I 30 years of working with families and doing counseling and stuff, I'm amazed in my own family too, how difficult at times it can be to communicate. And maybe you fall into this trap where you feel like, you know, the better my content, the better we'll communicate. And so you're trying to communicate to your kids within your family, and you're telling them every different way to try to get them to listen, and they just won't listen. Is there anyone right now in your family or your life, and you have some really good content you're trying to get across to them, and they won't listen? You have been telling them every, so you change it up, you try to be funny, or you come with everything, and they won't listen. Here's my problem. I forget sometimes that the content is not as important as the connection. Maybe there's a disconnect between you and them. Maybe they're angry, or they're mad at you, or they're scared, or, you know, there's something going on in the connection. My son got a new phone recently, fancy-dancy phone, and he doesn't get as good of connections on it, and all the time the calls are dropping. It's like, I got important things to say, he's got important things to say, but no connection, no communication. How frustrating it is, you want to jump on Facebook or GPS, you want to text somebody, and there's no connection. See, the key to being close is the same as communicating. How's our connection? Maybe there's someone in your life right now, and they're not listening to you. Could it be that there is a disconnect? And if you would reconnect with them, they'd be able to hear you. Because the secret to communication, the secret to being close, is staying connected. That's the secret. And so let's talk about that today. Number one in your notes, how does that happen? We've been answering some questions. How do I provide a safe place? How do I become the person that they want to be with and they come to? And when they lose their way, they want to come and be with me. How does that occur? Several months ago, this guy comes into work and he wants to buy a car. And he just got here from India. So he just gets here. He's from India and doesn't really know much about our culture or anything. And he has his friend drop him off because he thinks it's going to be a really simple process to buy a car. Ha, ha, ha. And so he comes in and he picks out a car and he's got all kinds of paperwork problems. He doesn't have his visa right, just a ton of stuff. It's getting later and later and later. It's 9:30 at night. This Indian guy is sitting at my desk and it turns out he can't buy a car, at least not tonight. I said, hey, man, as it turns out, you're not going to be able to get a car tonight, you know, and he just sits there. You know, I'm like, you're not going to be able to get a car tonight and we're going to be closing soon. So, you know, just sits there. And I said, hey, we can get together tomorrow. What time would you like to come tomorrow? And then finally I asked him, I said, how are you getting home? He says, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, what do you mean you don't know? Where do you live? I don't know that either. I was like, well, what do you mean? What, do you know what town you live in? He goes, I've just moved here. I'm like, well, what are you talking about, man? You don't have a ride? Do you know anybody to come and pick you up? You know what he said. I was like, well, how are you getting home tonight? This is America. We don't provide rides here. You know, and he doesn't know what to do. So finally I said, hey, man, I said, I'll give you a ride home. And he tells me he has GPS. Well, his GPS is set for India. He doesn't have any GPS for Salt Lake City. He doesn't know where he's going. He has no idea. Finally, he says to me, if you can get me to the Walmart at Jordan Landing, I know how to get home. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, do you know? No, just get me to the Walmart at Jordan Landing. I said, okay. It was a roundabout way to get there, but we finally get to the Walmart in Jordan Landing. And do you know, right, left, over the hill, right, left, over the hill, down, around, by that tree and everything? He drove me right up to his house. It was a long way around. I could have gotten there much simpler. But here's the moral of the story. If he could get to Walmart, he could find his way. And I thought, man, that's the advantage of having a close relationship with your kids. I want my kids to know this. If I can get to my parents, they'll help me find my way. At any stage. Amongst all the pressures of school or dating or life or any of the different phases, if I can get to my parents because they're a safe place, I'll be able to find my way. And that's the goal. Look what it says in the Bible about safety. Like a shelter from the wind, like a safe place in a storm, like streams of water in a dry land, like a cool shadow from a large rock in a hot land. I know a lot of times I forget how difficult it is for kids to grow up, and I don't know why that is, because I had a difficult time growing up. My folks got divorced. I had popularity problems in school. I had a face full of pimples. Nobody wanted to go with me to the dance. I didn't have enough money. When am I going to get a car? Oh, crap, I got a terrible head. You know, I know when we get our age, we look back and we go, lucky pucks, you don't even have to pay the bills. But you can forget. But if you just stop for a moment, life can get pretty dry when you're a kid. It can get pretty hot when you're a kid. Lots of things can happen. It isn't just all swinging on a tire swing. There can be a lot come up when you're growing. And to be a safe place, for my kids to see me, you know, like a stream in a desert. You can imagine. Hot, tired, thirsty, and all of a sudden, oh, there's water. You know, just when they call and you pick up the phone. They had that feeling. It's super, super hot, and they get by you, and for some reason, like shade, it just seems like it's not as hot. Nothing's changed. It's just school's not as hard, friends aren't as crazy. I feel so much better when I'm with my folks. That's the goal in parenting. It doesn't matter the phase. Two ideas on how that can occur. Just thoughts. Number one, watch how you talk to your children. And see it as an opportunity, because when you say things to them to encourage them, when you lift them up, when they've done something that, I don't know why it is, when kids are little, they can draw on a piece of paper and they're supposed to be drawing a picture of us, and they come over and they look like they have a big purple blob. And the first thing we do is go, oh, honey, look, everybody, a picture of me. This is a look at them like that. And it's so natural for us to do that until they get about in third grade and they bring the report card home and we don't treat them the same way. When you talk to them, we have the call. Do we encourage them, lift them up, praise them, or do we not? I want to encourage you to have boundaries in your family, even on what kind of words you let be spoken. In our family, growing up, there was one word we never said. We never said the word stupid. It was off limits. We never used that word. I didn't want anybody to feel dumb in the family. I didn't want my kids to ever feel like they weren't smart enough. I think it happened because I'd heard this story, a true story, about a traveling salesman that knocked on doors. So he's one of those dudes, door knocker. And he comes up to this one house. There's this kid sitting on the porch. He comes up, says, hi, how are you? I'd like to talk to your parents. Are your parents here? And what's your name? And the kid looks up at him and goes, stupid! Go away! And he's like, excuse me? I just asked you, what's your name? Stupid! He's like, hey, listen, young man. And then all of a sudden he hears from the living room, hey, stupid! Get in here and clean your room. And when I heard that story, I was like, You know, the Bible says, life and death is in the power of the tongue. Now, the cool thing about being a parent is you can generate life all day long. You don't have to generate death. You plan it out. You say, what words are going to be okay in our family? Because in the heat of the moment, we all reach for certain words. I mean, let's face it. When you're mad and angry, there's certain words that just feel better to say. You know, little tiny words like shucks. Oh, shucks! That doesn't work. You want a good word like shh. You fill in the blank. I mean, and it's true. But if you have a plan, and you and whoever you're raising your family with says, these are the words we say and these are the words we don't say. I don't care if they drag a skunk into the house as a pet. You don't say, that's so stupid. I mean, that's so cute. A skunk in my house. You have boundaries. You won't say them. So, I don't know if you've been able to tell when you start to disconnect from your children. You can just feel it in your soul when you start to disconnect from them. Another area that we have to be very, very careful with is physical affection, physical discipline. How you do that is your call, but you do have to be careful with it, because how we talk to our kids, how we touch our kids. I was talking to a dad one time, and with tears in his eyes, he told me that when he reached for his four-year-old to pick him up and hug him, the four-year-old recoiled back. And he realized that he was going to give a hug, but the four-year-old thought he was going to get a slap. Now, I just, words of wisdom, don't slap your kids. There's other ways if you're going to discipline them. Don't slap your kids, it's humiliating. It crushes their spirit and confuses them because they get all jumbled up with physical affection. We had a rule in our home, and it wasn't always easy to do. After we'd have some kind of discipline, we'd always calm down and we'd always hug the kids and kiss them. And of course, they didn't want to hug or kiss at that time. They didn't want anything to do with it. I'll spank you again. It's like, but I mean, you know, I mean, like we just didn't go from like discipline to nothing. So there'd be some kind of discipline, and then we'd wait, and I'd say, and once you could feel it, one of the best moments, and sometimes it was quite a while, is when one of the kids would finally break and realize, and they got to the point where they wanted that comfort. And you know God does that too. In the Bible it says that he disciplines those he loves. And when he does discipline us, he follows it up with some sort of comfort to reassure us. I'm with you. I love you. It's not just about this moment. Physical touch and affection can be really, really super powerful when you start to feel that disconnect with your kids. When you start to feel it, and so being a safe place. Number two, write in your notes, how do I resolve conflict? And let me step and take an aside for just a moment, because I was talking with someone this week, and they had gone to church many years ago, and they said something I never want to happen here. They said they went to church, and when they left church, they felt worse than when they arrived at church. I thought, oh, man. I mean, they went to church hoping I want something good to happen, and then they left, and they felt worse about themselves than when they arrived. And that's not the goal at Eastlake. And when we get into topics like this, please hear this from me now. We've all got our stuff, and so maybe you've said something to your kid you regret. You know, or maybe you've done something and you look on it and you regret it. And as you hear me talk, you're like, oh, I'm a loser. That's right, I shouldn't have done that. Don't go there. This isn't about beating yourself up. This is about saying, oh, today's the day that God gives me a clean slate. See, when you're at East Lake and something comes up for you, it's the Holy Spirit wanting to say, can I take that guilt away? Can I take that shame away? Can I take that failure away? It's not to put you down. It's to take something off of you. Jesus saw the religious system in his day. Everybody went to the big church. And He went to the church leaders and he said, here's the problem. When the people come to you, you weigh them down. He said, you don't lift a finger to take anything off of them. And then he said this, my burden is light. When people come to me, they leave lighter. So when you hear stuff today or you hear stuff in one of the talks or at East Lake, just acknowledge it and then let the Holy Spirit say, I want you to leave with a clean slate today. When stuff comes up, it's an opportunity to say, God, I want something better than that in my life. And let Him minister to you and take care of you. That's the point of it. Okay? So challenge. Resolve conflict. How do I resolve conflict? Rick Warren says this about conflict, pastor and author, should come up on the screen. The tunnel of conflict is the passageway to intimacy in any relationship. Until you care enough to confront and resolve the underlying barriers, you will never grow close to each other. So as safe as you are, there's always going to be conflict. Conflict's normal. And actually, there's a certain type of closeness that comes in conflict. Because when we have conflict with our kids, it's an opportunity for a certain sort of intimacy that doesn't happen unless we were in conflict. And there always will be conflict. When people get angry and mad at each other, the very first family in the Bible had such a hard time with conflict, and they got angry and mad at each other. Maybe you've seen this happen in your family with your kids. The two boys are fighting, and they're fighting over the silliest thing. Adam and Eve's kids, their boys, they're fighting. One boy thinks that God likes the other boy better. Crazy thing. You know, this mom is making pancakes for all the kids. They got Mormon family all around the tables and they're putting pancakes, huge family. And this one kid is just crying and screaming. And she said, what do you want? And he said, my brother's pancakes. You know, it's like, fighting over the silliest stuff. I mean, can you imagine? These two boys, they're fighting, and the older one thinks that God likes the younger one better. God likes you better than me. And he starts to get angry. Angry and more angry. And you know, if you don't settle your anger, look what the Bible says about anger. Be angry and don't sin. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. And give no opportunity to the devil. What is wrath? Well, wrath is an attitude. You get angry, but at some point, wrath becomes a part of who I am. Do you know there's some people, they don't get mad. They wake up mad. It's become a part of their personality. It's inside of them now. They have wrath. And sin is crouching all the time. And you can feel it when people are around them. It's like a mouse trap that nobody wants to say or do the wrong thing because it's just ready to pounce. The very first family starts off with something very silly. But the older son doesn't deal with it. He gets madder and more angry. And God, I have discovered that my life is not a game to God. He's not a spectator. He cares about the outcome of my life. And he reaches out to the older son and he says, you've got to deal with your anger, or this is going to go somewhere. This could cause such a huge thing in your family, and it did. Because he never dealt with it. It became wrath. And conflicts are going to come. The question is, can we resolve them, and will we resolve them? So take some notes. I'll give you some ideas resolving anger. Number one, do it quickly. Resolve it immediately. Don't put it off. Who are you mad at? Don't let it turn to wrath. We don't want our kids to just get madder and madder and madder and madder at us. We don't want to be more and more angry with our children. Deal with it quickly. Deal with it immediately. Don't give yourself time. Push through the fatigue. Don't say to yourself, oh, there'll be a better time to have to deal with this. Get it now. Go resolve it. Do it as quickly as you can. And then the second thing is, when you're in something with your kids and you're starting to get angry and you have a conflict, try to see it from their point of view, which is not easy. I was flying out somewhere not too long ago, and we had to do a stop in Las Vegas. So as we're flying down there, the pilot comes on the plane and says, if you look out your window right now, you'll be able to see the Grand Canyon. I'm like, wow, cool, man. I look out my window, and I can't see the Grand Canyon. I'm sitting right next to the window, and I look out, and I'm looking, and it's like, maybe it means it's coming up pretty soon. And I just see sagebrush. No Grand Canyon. And as I look across the aisle, they're like oohing and ah, ooh, ah, hey. I'm like, wait a second. And what I realized is that if you looked out my window, you saw something very differently than if you looked out their window. Now, can you imagine if I would have like caused a huge conflict? There's no such thing as a Grand Canyon. No way. Look, right, I'm looking out my window. I don't see no Grand Canyon. There's nothing out there. And I wouldn't necessarily be wrong. But man, I could cause a big fight. When you're with your kids, they're looking out a certain window. They're seeing life from a certain point of view. And so am I. And that can cause a huge conflict. So here's something to think about. What if you let them go first? What if you let them tell their story and tell you what they see and don't interrupt? It'll be so hard because they're going to say something that isn't right and you don't agree with and you're going to want to stop them. You know, when they start to tell the story and you're just like, ah, no, wait a minute. My job is to edit everything you say and make sure it's correct. And they're just trying to tell you what they see out of their window. So here's my question to us as parents. Would you be willing to let your children take you across the aisle and see their life from how they see it? Because they do see their life. And they might even be right about their life. You just may be looking at life from two different perspectives. And if you'll let them go first, if you'll sow that into them, they'll learn to do it for others. See, one of the great things about resolving conflict with our kids is it teaches them how to resolve conflict with other people, which every relationship is filled with. And two last things. See if you can get a double win, which is hard for me because I'm so competitive. So with my kids growing up, it was just even hard to let them win in sports. I mean, it was like pulling teeth to let them beat me in a game of horse and basketball, which I did. But it's like, I always want to win. I want to win. I feel best when I'm winning. And that's okay, but can they get a win too? What can you sacrifice? What can you give up? What can you be willing to concede? So, you know what? Kids don't like to feel like they're always a loser when they talk to us. Every conversation they have, they get corrected and told how it should be. I like to feel like they're right once in a while, and they had something important to say as well. A double win. And the last one is don't give up. And this is important when the huge conflicts occur, because they can. And just write it. This is just an idea under solving conflict. Don't give up. 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 There's a story that circulated in World War II that was not true, but was very encouraging to the troops, and so it was propagated, and they told the story over and over and over and over and over again. It was like a legend. And what the story was is that the leader of the German country, Hitler, and Italy, Mussolini, and Winston Churchill, England, and they met at a country estate, and they started talking about the possibilities of either ending the war, or are they going to continue to go on. And the English soldiers loved this story. I guess there was a pond close by in the story, and there's all these big goldfish swimming around. And one of them challenged the other one, said, well, maybe we should just settle it right now. The person that could jump in that little, you know, fountain pond over there and get the most fit. And Hitler jumps up, pulls his gun out, goes into the pond, and starts blasting away. Empties his chamber, doesn't get one fish. Mussolini jumps up, and he jumps into the pond. He starts slashing and pulling it, trying to grab at him. Doesn't get one fish. Churchill puts his cigar down, dumps out his tea from his teacup. He goes over, and he starts to fill his teacup and pour the water onto the ground. And the other guys are laughing. What are you doing? You think you're going to? He said, let me tell you something. It may take a long time. But eventually, we will have the victory. And sometimes it's just about not giving up with your kids in conflict. Not just saying, whatever. Not believing that the conflict unresolved really doesn't matter. Because it does matter. Because it causes a disconnect. Disconnect. A man that helped me a lot with parenting, he had two boys too. He kind of taught me how to decipher when I was disconnected at times with my kids, but more importantly, what to do. And he told me a story with his teenage son. He knew he was disconnected with his son. He didn't know what to do about it. There was distance. They weren't talking. And it was very obvious something had changed. So he finally went to his son. He said, listen, I don't know what's happened. I don't know what you've done, but I want to say something to you. I want to give you a free pass. No matter what you have done, I want you to know, if you'll just talk to me about it, you're not going to get in any trouble or any consequences at all. I am giving you a free pass for whatever you've done. And so the next day, the son comes up to him after thinking about it, and he says, Dad, I stole your Porsche. And he's like, okay. Because he had restored a 1960s Porsche, and it was perfect. And when he's away on his business trip, his teenage son found the keys and took it for a 3-hour joyride with his buddy. And when he came home, he was scared his dad was going to see it wasn't just perfect in the driveway, or he would notice the miles, or it would fly out the back like Ferris Bueller or whatever. Dad, I stole your Porsche. And his dad said, okay. I've done some stuff kind of like that. And I want you to know I forgive you. Let's just go forward. Because he understood that sometimes it can't be about what has been done. You have to do something to get reconnected. You have to do something. And maybe you're disconnected with one of your kids right now and you're just thinking, yeah, I'll get to it. Don't. Do something. Figure it out. Maybe just like him, maybe you need to go and say, hey, free pass, whatever you've done. Last thing, number three in your notes, how do I challenge them? Let me read you something out of the Bible. It's in your notes, but I'll read it out of here. I can't impress this on you too strongly. God is looking over your shoulder. Christ himself is the judge with the final say on everyone living and dead. He's about to break into the open with his rule. So proclaim the message with intensity. Keep on your watch. Challenge. Warn. Urge your people. Don't ever quit. Just keep it simple. For some people, it comes very, very natural to challenge their kids. And someone I work with, they were redoing their house. And when he was a kid, they were putting the roof on. And his dad was at work. He spent the whole day cleaning up the yard, picking up all the nails, sweeping, stacking all of the shingles, mowing the lawn. He spent the whole day working to surprise his dad. When he came home, his dad pulled up in the station wagon, and the first thing he said to him was, what's your bike doing in the driveway? Get that out of there. We talked about that. He didn't mean anything by it, but you're better than that. And he kind of challenged him at the wrong time. And if you're really good at challenging your kids and that comes natural to you, that's a gift and that's cool. But it's not a license to over-critique them. Challenge them so they can get better, but don't over-critique them. Now, for some of us, it's very difficult to challenge our children. It's painful to watch them struggle. We don't like to push them. We don't like to challenge them. We like to nurture them. We like to help them with challenges so it's not as difficult. We're on the other side of the spectrum. We're the ones that overplay comfort. We overplay support. It's so difficult to watch our kids struggle. And yet we can stunt their growth. If you have children, is there any area of their life they're not growing in like they should? Because you don't want to see them struggle. You don't want to challenge them. When I was in second grade, I sat by this kid that had cerebral palsy and he couldn't write his alphabet. So when the teacher wasn't looking, I used to grab his paper and I'd write his alphabet. I could match his kind of handwriting. And I'd write as much as I could to make it look like he could write his alphabet, and this went on for days and weeks. And then one day, the teacher caught me. And in front of the entire class, she stood over me and she said this, "You're not helping him." And that's when I got a chance to see myself. Mercy gift. I don't like to see people struggle. It was so difficult for him to write. It was so painful for me to watch him go through a struggle. But she was way more on top of it than I was, because she knew this boy had a long road ahead of him. And I certainly wasn't always going to be able to bail him out. He was going to need to learn to do it. Are you stunting your kids' growth in any area because it's too difficult to watch them struggle? It's too hard. Because they need to struggle. Listen to this little story. A man spent hours watching a butterfly struggling to emerge from its cocoon. It managed to make a small hole, but its body was too large to get through. After a long struggle, it appeared to be exhausted and remained absolutely still. The man decided to help the butterfly, and with a pair of scissors, he cut open the cocoon, thus releasing the butterfly. However, the butterfly's body was very small and wrinkled, and its wings were all crumpled. The man continued to watch, hoping that at any moment the butterfly would fly away with its wings, but nothing happened. In fact, the butterfly spent the rest of its very short life dragging around its shrunken body and shriveled wings, incapable of flight. What the man had failed to understand was that the tight cocoon and the effort the butterfly had to make in order to squeeze out of that tiny hole was God's way of strengthening the butterfly's wings. Can't we be just like that man, though? And we don't realize that God creates certain circumstances for our kids. And we have to let that happen, or we'll stunt their growth. Do you know one of the reasons that they have to be allowed to struggle? Because at some point they've got to get that they can turn to Jesus for help. If I'm always the Savior, they don't need Him. And here's the problem. I'm not all-knowing, and I'm not all-powerful, and I'm not all-loving. And I can't be everywhere at the same time like Him. So I have to let my son struggle, even though it's very painful. I have to let him. Because it's in the struggle that they learn, Jesus, I'm turning to you. And that's the most important thing to get down when it comes to being close to your kids. Because the most important thing, it's the bottom line, is that they stay close to Jesus all throughout their life. That we support that and encourage that. We don't get in the way of that. When it's all said and done, the one great thing they'll be able to say is, I know Jesus is my Savior. And a big part of it is because of the way my parents parented me. If they could say something like in this last scripture in your notes, "But as for me, I get as close to Him as I can. I have chosen Him. And I will tell everyone about the wonderful ways He has rescued me." Man, if you're a parent today, would that like be the best thing to come out of their mouth at every phase? You want to be a parent someday? That's your goal?